you can set yourself goals, absolutely, but as you change over time, then your goals change as well. And so I think having a level of fluidity around sort of, you know, what you're reaching for and that achievement is really important.
My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech Podcast. I'm in London, England, and meeting the most incredible women in tech. It is so exciting. And today I have Katie with me. Katie, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Multiple.
Hi, I'm Katie. Really good to see you here. Great to have you in London. So I am managing partner of a business called Multiple. We are a strategic consultancy business and we work with scaling technology companies to help them grow and engineer massive scale through their lifetime.
And Katie, who are you? What is your name and your role in the company?
So I am managing partner of the business and co-founder.
But Katie Turner?
Indeed, sorry. Yes.
And what inspired you to create Multiple?
I guess, you know, having kind of worked in and around the early stage tech space for the last 10 years or so, I think, you know, the scene here in Europe has evolved a lot of support for kind of seed stage businesses, let's say. So you can go to an accelerator program, you can be in co-working spaces, there's quite a lot of early stage funding. But when you get to kind of inflection point, and let's say that's around Series A, there's not many places to go for help.
Right.
So how do you really figure out those difficult, thorny strategic challenges around scale? You know, if you were a corporate business, you might go to McKinsey, but there's no way, of course, that kind of scaling technology business can afford that. Plus, McKinsey guys wear the wrong clothes, speak the wrong language, haven't sat in the shoes of the entrepreneurs. So the team we've built here are all entrepreneurs, operators, ex-investors, people that have been through that journey of founding businesses, getting funding, having exits, blowing shit up. So we just wanted, I guess, to take the skills that we'd all acquired over the last however many years that the team's been operating in these, you know, these kind of companies and try and help those businesses grow.
And what is your favorite thing that you look for in a company? Like, what's that thing that you're like, oh, they have that, and I know this is going to be good?
I think I would say it's a sense of purpose, whatever that purpose may be. And oftentimes, actually, the purpose is implicit, and part of the job that we have here is teasing that out and articulating it and codifying it. Because if you understand why you exist as a business, then that's your true north. It's the place that you can steer towards. It's kind of the filter against which you can throw everything. And then you can make decisions and scale really coherently, cohesively. So I guess, you know, talking to somebody or sitting in front of an entrepreneur and you just know there's this like total like drive and sense of purpose. And, you know, they often, you know, infuse that through the business, but they haven't necessarily clearly articulated it. And like, those are exactly the sorts of companies that we want to be working with and helping.
And you brought up a few key terms before we jump back and how you became who you are today. You used terms like McKinsey and you used a term like Series A. What company is McKinsey? What does that mean? Because some people may not know.
And then what's seed funding? What's Series A? What's the breakdown?
Yeah. Sure. So McKinsey's a big management consultancy business, typically working with, you know, multinational corporates, large national businesses, and they really try and help their clients, you know, figure out strategic stuff. And so they're almost like a fresh pair of eyes that comes in from the outside and, you know, helps you solve really hard problems in the simplest of terms. Right. So I guess we're building, we like to say, a badass McKinsey for tech companies. And trying to help those badass companies be more badass. And then in terms of the other things that I mentioned, so kind of seed funding is typically the first round of funding that you would take. So the space we work in is technology, and lots of the businesses that we see coming through the ecosystem are typically looking for seed funding from either angel investors or perhaps from funds that provide that kind of capital. Then Series A is typically the next round of investment. So seed funding, I mean, it's variable, and it's different in the States versus here, but here it's typically around, let's say, kind of £50,000 to like £1 million, and then the kind of Series A round is typically like in Europe £2 million to £10 million.
Right. Awesome, thank you. And bringing it back to where it all started, when did you first fall in love with technology?
Weirdly, I'm not sure I am in love with technology. I mean, I think technology kind of serves a purpose, but actually it's about solving problems for human beings. Mm-hmm. And I suppose that I've always seen my role as a translator between engineers that build amazing code and then a human being that is actually going to have a need satisfied or a problem solved. So I guess I'm more in love with the problem solving than the technology in and of itself. But to answer your question, in around 1999, I started my first role in technology, and that was with Orange, who are a big mobile operator, so equivalent to Verizon, for example, in the US. And I was really a product manager inside that organization. So I was building businesses and products and services, 4 years in the UK and then 4 years in their international business. And it was at that point that I kind of realized that, you know, like the world was changing, that the way we were solving problems was completely technology enabled. And I've always worked in technology since then.
And when was Multiple founded?
So 2015.
Oh, wow. Just a couple of years.
Yeah. So we're a startup ourselves.
You're a startup catering to startups. And what kind of companies do you look for in it? Like which kind of companies are part of your portfolio?
We have more of a stage focus. So going back to what I was talking about with respect to seed funding, Series A, and then after that, you kind of get Series B, Series C. We typically look to help at the right inflection point of growth. So classically, that'll be around kind of Series A phase when you've kind of taken that lot of money on. Let's say you do a £2 million fundraise and you've suddenly got this money in the bank and you're like, shit, now I need to like hire a ton of people or think about my culture properly for the first time or, you know, take a really, you know, a clear narrative across new and different channels or move into new markets, whether that's new products or new geographies. So we look for inflection points like that. So kind of Series A would be one inflection point. Series B is another when they're, you know, moving up, scaling even further and taking on board even more money. So we love working with those sorts of companies, but we also do quite a lot of work with venture capital funds directly. So in effect, the investors that are deploying the money to help them both think about like their place in the market because venture capital is becoming increasingly busy, I guess, in London particularly, but also, you know, across the UK. And, you know, as much as it's not hard to sell money, actually entrepreneurs are savvier than ever about working with smart money and smart investors. So we do some work with some VC clients. And then we also do a little bit of work with kind of what we think of as challenger corporates who are perhaps wanting to reach a new demographic or a new audience or explore new channels or do smart stuff with technology. And because we're so connected to the ecosystem here, we can match them with, for example, startups that are, you know, have the audience that they want or have a really cool product that will help them innovate.
Totally. And you've had a lot of roles in your life that have great responsibility and a lot of attention to detail. Mm-hmm. What kind of training did you have or what kind of jobs did you have in the beginning that got you here?
So working for Orange was a really helpful experience for me from that perspective. So they were a business that massively invested in potential. So, you know, I had a pretty kind of low-level job, frankly, when I started there, but if you were able to demonstrate, you know, kind of the potential in your role in that right. business, they would invest in you. Right. So I've typically always done kind of product marketing roles apart from, you know, when I was a VC, which was a little bit different. But I had no qualifications in marketing, and that they actually paid for me to get qualified. So I did, you know.
That's kind exciting.
Of, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, to get that sort of support and mm-hmm. investment from your employer, and this kind of when I was in my 20s, was great. And, you know, just gave me lots of skills and expertise, but also is very confidence building.
And what's it take to become a VC?
That's a good question.
Oh my God, I love your smile.
Well, so, I mean, the classic route to get into VC in Europe was actually that you had worked perhaps for a management consultancy business, like the one I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, McKinsey, or one of those guys, or that you'd come through kind of investment banking finance sort of route. I think that's changed here now, which is a really positive thing for the ecosystem. So I think increasingly VCs are looking for people that have operational support and operation experience and understanding. So, you know, they're taking people out of startups, they're taking perhaps, you know, kind of founders who've, you know, done it once or twice
right.
And can really sit in the shoes of the entrepreneur. There's an ongoing debate, however, whether entrepreneurs make good, you know, VCs, and that's probably like for a whole other conversation. But I think, you know, just sort of boiling it down, having kind of expertise and experience of, you know, operations is super helpful right now.
I'd like to have two different conversations. One, to kind of like wrap this one up, if someone is in school right now, or maybe they don't want to go to college mm-hmm. and they just want to go straight into the venture capital world, like what is that initial step that they have to take in order to become a VC one day?
I think that the route for somebody like that is definitely kind of out there in the world, not in academia, in my opinion. I mean, I never went to business school. I don't have an MBA. And whilst that's like a completely worthwhile thing to do, I guess my feeling, this is really shaped by my journey, is that the more experience you have of just being out in the world and working inside businesses and, you know, kind of getting access to, you know, people, business builders, entrepreneurs,
right.
like that's more helpful in my opinion. That's just my opinion. 100%. I'm sure a lot of people would disagree. But yeah, I think, you know, if you are kind of, let's say, finishing school, finding ways to, you know, networks that you can get into, events, meetups where you can get exposure to mm-hmm. kind of people in startups, founders, is a really useful thing to do.
Totally.
I think there's a lot of good kind of mentorship programs,
totally.
Internship programs.
I was just thinking internship.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, again, the sort of thinking, I think, around internships has changed in a very healthy way. Like, they're valued, they're valuable, they get paid. You know,
right.
that's a good, like, life decision to make at this point in time, where in the past, you know, you may have just been slaving away in an unpaid internship. That's not the case.
Totally.
No.
And then the other flip side that I wanted to ask, because, I mean, everybody always has this question, left and right, night and day. How do you raise money? Like, what does it take to get an investor to pay attention to you and actually get the money in the bank?
Yeah. Every investor is different, so they'll all have like their personal peccadillo, the thing that they're super obsessed about. And so knowing the investor that you're talking to
right.
is really important, you know, point number one. But for you as the entrepreneur or the person raising the capital, I mean, kind of classically, VCs look at three things. They look at the market opportunity and making sure that's big enough.
Mm-hmm.
They look at the team, and they look at the differentiation or the intellectual property that exists in the business. And those three things are typically more important than even the product, let's
right.
say, right? So if you can tell a really good story around those things, then, you know, that's going to be incredibly helpful to you. Of course, there's a whole raft of other criteria that you
right.
will be assessed against. But if you can say, you know, I've got this amazing team who are perfect to build this business in a huge space, and here's how we're different, then that's a really good head start. I think, you know, it's also about being a little kind of, you know, fearless, very, you know, you need to be persistent, like get in front of them, put yourself in front of them, find different ways to do that, you know, pester them on Twitter, you know, ask them
yeah.
for a meeting across different channels. I mean, the challenge, I think, for a lot of entrepreneurs is that they don't see
the deal flow that an investor is trying to cope with. And, you know, the best investors will get the most crazy amount of deal flow.
Right.
So, you know, how do you kind of stand out from the crowd or find kind of novel ways to, you know, be at the same event as them or go and talk to them,
right,
or send them something really cool in the post? We had a situation at work a couple of days ago where a guy sent my co-founder, who does a lot of angel investing, one shoe in the post. And it just grabbed our attention. We were like, maybe you should have a chat with that guy.
What was the shoe?
It was just, I do know, I wish I could remember, but it was related to the
business. Was it a new shoe or a used shoe?
It was a brand new shoe. And it was something like, you know, kind of, you know, the inference was like, you know, I could, if I speak to you, then I can like buy a whole pair or something. Like, it was just really funny and quirky, and it really stood out, you know.
That's amazing. That's so cool. It's always about thinking outside of the box.
Exactly, yeah.
Or thinking outside of the shoebox.
Exactly, yeah.
No, it's great to hear that. I think a lot of people, the first thing I learned when I raised money that I didn't understand before I learned this was that being in a relationship with an investor is a partnership. And the first thing is every investment firm looks for something different, whether they're investing in like a SaaS business model, software as a service, or they're investing in fintech, you know, or just there's so many different categories. I'm not going to describe them all, but every investor has kind of what they invest in. And they also have a bracket. Some only invest up to $250,000, like angel investing, or you're talking about 50 million, or you're, you know, and to know all of those different components so you don't waste someone's time, so you know who you're getting into a relationship with, and then looking for the strategic partnership in that relationship as well. It's all things I didn't understand at first.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really, it feels like a black box from the outside, right? Doesn't it? But absolutely, like doing that research and due diligence means that you can be targeted, you know, about the kind of partner that you want to bring on board. Because, you know, as I was saying earlier, I think entrepreneurs are increasingly smart about this stuff. And also there's a wealth of information, you know, tons of VCs blog, you know, tons of VCs are kind of putting content out into the world. You can follow them on Twitter. You can see what they're talking about. Like, do your research and be super targeted. Like, find the person that you think has the track record and the experience and the investment history that's going to add value to your business.
Totally.
And you can do that very straightforwardly through the public domain.
What websites would you use to start research?
That's a really good question. I mean, you know, kind of subscribing to some of the kind of, you know, the VC's direct sort of blog. So, you know, read Fred Wilson and what he's talking about, you know, read Mark Sister, read those guys. There's a, you know, a lot of European VCs that blog. So, you know, that's helpful, but of course you need to know who they are in the first place.
Would you use like AngelList or Crunchbase?
Yeah, I think AngelList is a good place to start. Crunchbase is a good place to start. Reading TechCrunch and seeing what deals are being done is also a great place to go, because then you can kind of see who's, you know, been putting money into XYZ, and then from there you can jump off into their, you know, kind of specific sites.
Yeah. And when you're just growing a business day to day and you have, you know, one of your teammates didn't deliver something in the precise way that you wanted it, or a contract isn't exactly as you expected it to be, or a portfolio company isn't performing to what you desired it to perform and at the pace that was expected. What, how do you overcome the day-to-day of growing a business?
I guess I think having a team that you really trust is critical, and a team that you believe in. I mean, one of the joys of my business currently is that we all love working together and we really care about each other and we have loads of fun together. And even if there's a situation, you know, something perhaps hasn't gone quite according to plan, or you feel like somebody hasn't performed, because we trust each other, we can talk to each other about that. And so I think communication is critical. Like, culture is everything for us.
Totally.
So we were like completely focused, Gabby and I, my co-founder, when we were building the company, on finding not any people, the right people.
Right.
The people that had the experience, but more importantly, had the culture fit. So the work that we do every day is sitting down with entrepreneurs, helping them through their business challenges, but challenging them when we need to. And, you know, we needed to find people that had experience like that, but also would fit with the culture that we're trying to create here. And that culture is definitely one of you know, really believing in the purpose, believing in what we're trying to do, but having a lot of fun whilst doing it. And I think if you can focus on culture and the right fit of people, then you can work through those challenges.
Totally. I'm glad you brought up Gabby, because I wanted to bring up, we met through your co-founder, Gabby. Tell me a little bit about Gabby. He's like a magical human. He's a unicorn.
He is. So Gabby and I have known each other for a few years. We actually met mentoring on Seed Camp, which is one of the big European accelerator programs and first round funds. So they do both funding and they provide kind of acceleration of businesses. And we were mentoring there, and Reshma, who runs Seed Camp, kind of said, you guys don't know each other, it's crazy you don't know each other. And she put us together and we just got on like a house on fire after like 30 seconds. But Gabby has a really interesting background, and actually one that I think is quite unique in this world of technology businesses, in the sense that he is, you know, kind of for the last 25 years done a huge amount of work on purpose, brand and positioning. And I guess our thesis as a business is that purpose, people and platforms or kind of systems processes are fundamental to your growth. So, you know, codifying your purpose, finding the right people and culture fit inside your business, telling the right story to the people outside your business, your customers, and then, you know, finding the right organizational design, tool set, technologies to scale the business is how you can really kind of engineer growth. And coming back to Gabby, what he has this, you know, kind of unique skill around is helping businesses with that purpose and positioning piece. And, you know, the fact is, actually, to wheel back to the start of the conversation, technology for the sake of technology doesn't move the needle for anybody. Technology that delivers, you know, a real purpose that has, that solves a problem, is then when it becomes interesting to the likes of you and I or another human being. And what he's amazing at doing is kind of taking data from the heads of, you know, the people in the teams of the businesses that we work with, and just crystallizing this into, you know, like the really succinct, like perfect thought, if you like, that helps them, you know, that becomes their true north, that helps them kind of, you know, scale the business and move it forwards.
I love it. And one last question is, what would you say you've learned about yourself in the last few years about achieving your dreams?
That your dreams change all the time.
Oh, I haven't heard that before. Wait, elaborate. I have not heard that before.
I guess, you know, my view is, like, I tend to get a bit philosophical at this point in interviews often and say that, you know, life's pretty ambiguous. And I think that you can set yourself goals, absolutely, but as you change over time, then your goals change as well. And so I think having a level of fluidity around sort of, you know, what you're reaching for and that achievement is really important, because the ground can kind of shift from under you, and then you can feel really, you know, upset, disappointed that you didn't achieve this, you know, end that you thought you had in mind. And yeah, so I guess I would say, like, being fluid and being adaptable means that you can adapt your goals and achieve a bunch of different things.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast. How can people connect with you personally online?
It's a pleasure. You can get me on Twitter at @KATYT.
Perfect. Katie, thank you. You guys, if you want to connect with more incredible women in tech, be sure to go to the Women in Tech Facebook group at womenintechvip.com. It takes you straight there. That's womenintechvip.com. And of course, always feel free to tweet at me at Esprit Devora or at Women in Tech Show. I will talk to you guys, see you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.